All right.
We're good.
What's in wheels? Here we go.
All right. So let's just start talking.
Episode zero. I have to say, I like the logo.
So yeah, season zero of what could become something or might become nothing. We'll see what happens.
News on cars. What more could people ask for?
Exactly. But what's in wheels? We're calling it season zero, episode one.
Right.
We're going to do three of these, see what works. Hey, if you like it out there, we might do season one.
There you go.
But we're going to try season zero. Your name is William Kelly. Tell me a bit about yourself. Introduce yourself to our audience.
Well, I'm William. I'm basically a journalistic hack. Have been for many years. It's been my side hustle, as is common these days. And, with COVID, got back into writing, having suspended it with the advent of the internet that killed the magazine that I used to write for. It happens.
Yeah.
Basically, it's my interest, my passion, writing about things, motoring, doing things like this. It's very exciting. I love it.
Fantastic. Well, we've had many conversations now over beers.
And we have.
talking about cars, specifically EVs, which is what this show is about. And we thought, well, why don't we've got a studio. Why don't we use it?
Absolutely.
Jump on camera and talk crap for an hour at a time.
Well, let's try and give the audience something worth listening to.
Of course.
As opposed to these giant ego fest.
Anyway, we have a logo.
I think it's stunning because it's got orange in it. It's my favorite color.
Oh, it's your favorite color.
Good.
What's in wheels? I think it's a great name.
Exactly.
And as you can tell from the name, the show is going to be all about
what's in wheels.
What's in wheels. Yeah. EVs and hybrids.
EVs and hybrids.
REEVs and PHEVs and HEVs and what else is there out there?
Well, maybe we should start there because as a good friend of mine once said to me, when you're starting any decent project, you must start with a basis of common understanding of what things are within these projects. And maybe the terminology that we're throwing around may not be familiar to everybody. So maybe let's just delve into that a little bit and discuss what NEVs are. And NEVs basically are new energy vehicles.
And that's the catch-all phrase with a battery in it, basically.
Well, it's actually not necessarily anything with a battery. A hydrogen vehicle, for example, could be classified as a new energy vehicle. And basically, new energy vehicles have as their premise this idea behind reducing emissions in the environment. So taking the amount that we put through our engines as fossil fuels and turning into carbon dioxide, monoxide, and all the other nasty stuff, and reducing that via new energy alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
So I've already mentioned hydrogen. We can actually do a show on hydrogen as to why it's probably not going to work. And EVs are a subset of NEVs. Mm-hmm. So new energy vehicles, EVs, electric vehicles, is a subset of new energy vehicles. And within electric vehicles, we then have a whole bunch of different subsets. So anything that's got a battery in it is basically part of that subset.
Yeah.
So we have full electric vehicles, battery electric vehicles,
BEVs.
Which we call BEVs, as you
that
quite
would
correctly
be like
out.
A Volvo EX30 in the South African context, or a BYD Atto 3, or a Seal, or cars like that do not have any petrol or diesel associated.
Correct. In other words, the only fuel type they use is electricity. Okay, and so they generally have bigger batteries, weigh a bit more as a consequence. Normally, the ones that are brought into this country have blistering performance.
Yes,
it's quite something, and that actually is what sold me on EVs. The first EV I ever drove was actually a, believe it or not, a Porsche Taycan.
Oh yes,
but the entry level one, and that thing is sufficiently fast to. And I looked at this and I said, "This is the future, hands down."
How long ago was this?
Duncan, we're going back into the vast annals of misty history here. 2 years? Somewhere around about there? And to my eternal disillusionment, I have yet to drive the Taycan Turbo S.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe that's something on a different level.
Mm-hmm.
It's just
That's not an EV, though.
It's a full EV.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Okay.
But Porsche put the word turbo in. It's one of these things that is just the Porsche anomaly, top of the range. Turbo.
Okay.
Irrespective of whether that has one or not,
yeah,
that's it. But, that's Porsche for you. They got it right, so I can't really complain. It is what it is.
All right, so I'm going to throw this up on the screen, William.
Yeah,
because,
here we go.
This is from Zero Carbon Charge, which has opened a off-grid charging station in Northwest near Volmansrandstadt. I've been out there.
Correct.
And I saw this on LinkedIn, and I thought I'd steal it for our purposes.
It's fantastic. It's a fantastic graphic. And in fact, I was writing about exactly this this morning, funnily enough, as it turns out. So we talked about battery electric vehicles, and there they are, as you can see, only only juice that they use, the only fuel they use is electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have this thing called the range extender electric vehicle.
And I drove one of those just a few weeks ago, actually, in Spain. It was the C10 from Leap Motor, Chinese.
And you were singularly...
I was...
which of these buttons are you going to reach for? Maybe we should explain these buttons.
Explain our buttons, yes.
What's this? This is...
That is...
Poor.
That is not great.
This is...
Meh.
This is...
Yeah.
And this is?
Super cool.
I'm guessing you're not pushing this one.
I'm not pushing that one.
And I guess you're not pushing that one.
I'm going to...
Meh.
Meh. Okay. That's a show in and of itself,
let me be fair. The C10 is actually a very nice car. It's a little dull. The design is, it's not going to turn any heads. It's getting the mayor though because of the assisted driving, the ADAS system, which is far too aggressive and is really like having your mother sitting next to you backseat driving the whole time.
It's a foretaste of what's coming.
What's coming?
And they're all getting it. We must resist.
Yes.
We must fight ADAS. We must fight the nanny. The nanny.
We will fight them on the beaches. We shall fight them on the landing grounds.
No, we want to drive our cars. We don't need to be nannied around in the bloody things. If you wanted autonomous driving, Waymo's doing it. Use one of those.
Yes, exactly.
But not in my driveway.
I really don't want to know when I'm like 2 millimeters too close to the lane.
And if you're not absolutely perfectly central, it moans at you. No. I agree with you 100%. Those things drive me dead.
Exactly. But we're getting sidetracked. Let's talk about these other things.
Okay. So range extended. And range extended electric vehicles basically have one principal means of propulsion, but two fuel sources. So the basic means of propulsion is electric motors that drive the wheels. The batteries, however, are actually charged by a petrol-derived or diesel-derived engine.
A generator.
You have a generator on board, a sophisticated generator.
This is not a Ryobi you buy at Macro, though.
It's not the Ryobi you buy at Macro. It's, in fact, a normal engine that they've cooked up to
be highly efficient.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. To power the batteries that power the wheels.
So the engine doesn't touch the wheels.
Correct. Mm-hmm. That, in essence, is an area that's a little gray because in some instances the engine does power the wheels a little bit.
Oh, I see.
But not through the gearbox. Mm-hmm. Let's just ignore that for the time being because it's complicated and we don't quite understand that yet.
It's quite a new concept in the market.
It is a new concept, but it's actually been around for ages in ships. I mean, all your cruise ships these days are electric.
Yeah.
The electric motors driven by diesel generators.
Oh.
So it's the reason for that is apparently the motors are much more maneuverable. So your props can actually swivel and change direction.
Fascinating.
Because they're not connected to anything other than the electric motor, which is tiny, powering the prop.
Mm.
Anyway, and there's a degree of efficiency that's evolved in it. So that's the kind of tech that's deployed in range-extended EVs.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get these plug-in hybrid electric EVs, which is the next step down. And in essence here, what you have is you have two means of propulsion and two fuel sources. So you have electric motors driving the wheels and you have your petrol engine driving the wheels through a normal gearbox.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there's a bit of transfer between the petrol engine charging the hybrid battery. So you can use a petrol engine to charge the battery and you can plug the battery in. So typically on these, the batteries are bigger than they would be in the last class, which we're getting to, which is the hybrid electric vehicle. And the ranges on these cars are not as big as they are on pure battery electric vehicles because you don't have as big a battery in them. The intention.
These HEVs, are these what would typically be referred to as soft hybrids where you don't really.
Yeah, the HEVs are kind of like what happens is you've got a small little battery in there and it basically gets
helps reduce the fuel consumption
exactly,
a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So this would be like
a Toyota Corolla Cross, for example.
Yes, RAV4's mild hybrid. Honda Jazz actually made a mild hybrid 5 years ago.
Those were the first kind of hybrids that came into this market.
Well, people forget that Toyota have been making this for years.
Yeah.
I mean, the Prius is not new.
The Prius, exactly. That's 25 years old.
100%. So if you want to go and get experience around all of this particular technology, look no further than Toyota.
Can you still buy a Prius?
They've done it. Yes, you can.
You can
in the States, yeah.
Okay.
I don't think they're available in South Africa. They used to be.
I had a feeling they're not available here anymore. Yeah. Because they didn't sell very many of them. It was quite a pricey vehicle for what you were getting.
Exactly. Mm. And that's the big problem with BEVs at the moment. They don't sell all that well here because of the tax. Mm-hmm. You know, they're imported. They have an import surcharge on them.
Mm.
I think, as far as I can tell, we're the only country in the world that's stupid enough to do that. You know, we want
so dumb.
We wanted more environmentally friendly cars, so you must pay more for them in tax. Every other world subsidizes the price of these vehicles to get them into the market.
Oh, apparently these tax laws were introduced to tax golf carts.
and so your 1.4 million rand MG Cyberster is an effective
a golf cart.
I mean, okay, I must be honest, having sat in that thing, if golf carts were like that, I'd be driving a golf cart.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I've been in a few EVs that felt like golf carts.
But less said about that, the better.
Sure.
And yeah, you know, in terms of market adoption, you know, obviously South Africa's way behind. So mm-hmm. we're really at the early stages. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing in Europe and other markets where EVs are being pushed is that the adoption rates are much, much higher. Mm-hmm. And EVs are, despite what you read on Facebook, are actually selling in increasing numbers. Mm-hmm. And the interesting stat that Greg from Accenture gave me and gave
Greg Kress,
shout out to Greg, is that the percentage of people who've bought an EV that will buy another one is extraordinarily high.
It's so once about, they get a taste of it, they
once
stay.
It's around about 95%, if memory serves me correctly. You can correct me if it's significantly different from that. But it tells you, once you've had an EV, you don't go back. Mm. And the interesting thing is, why is that? You know, why are people that hooked onto an EV once they've had it?
Is it cost?
It comes down to it. I mean, I wrote an article for you guys on exactly that. You know, so electricity per kilometer traveled is significantly cheaper than fuel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's cheaper than petrol. You just plug it in at home and you pay your couple of rand per kilowatt hour, and it's substantially cheaper.
We're talking half, a third?
About a third.
About a third of the price of
petrol.
About
a third, mm-hmm. give or take, if you're charging from home.
Right. And if you're charging at a charging station, it's obviously more expensive.
It gets a lot more expensive, yeah.
It depends where you top up the battery, but correct. It generally is still cheaper than petrol?
It generally is still cheaper than petrol, yeah. So, and that's where your savings start. Mm. They don't end there. There's more good news. I'm just the bearer of good news.
You could swear keep it coming.
You swear I was an advocate for EVs. and it comes in your running costs. You don't have an oily engine to maintain. So
they hardly need to be serviced.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Your braking is your brake discs and pads are hardly used because you have regenerative braking on a lot of EVs these days. In fact, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not actually slowing the car physically down with your brake pads. It's just going into recharging your batteries.
Yeah, yeah.
And funny enough, there are some stats coming out now that show cars that are sort of 3, 4 years old, 5 years old on their batteries, the amount of regeneration charge that goes into those batteries over their lifespan just from the braking
mm-hmm.
is extraordinary.
It is amazing,
it's
actually.
It's extraordinary. You know, so you look at this and you're thinking, well, how much am I saving through regen?
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all free.
I was amazed because we were driving a Volvo a CX40. We did a Greg from Accenture was on this trip as well.
Yes.
We did this cross-country EV road trip last year, which was a great experience. But I remember I was with Greg and we were driving the Volvo XC40 down the pass. I forget the name of the pass, but maybe you know it, from Barrydale down towards Sierbraak and then Swellendam.
Oh, yes, yeah. It's a stunning pass.
It's a stunning, beautiful pass. I've forgotten the name of it. But
comes with
age. We were using that regenerative braking there. And I think we got back about 10% of the battery on one mountain pass. It was just extraordinary.
It's just, yeah, that's what potential energy does for you when you're going from high down, down to low.
Yeah.
So that's all part and parcel of it. And then, of course, you know, the rest of it is you book it in for a service because you want to change your pollen filter and your air filter, and that's really about it. Wear and tear on your tires, pretty much the same, despite the extra weight. But you compensate for that by inflating your tires to a slightly higher pressure. And Michelin now actually build a tire specifically for EVs. That runs quieter because you notice tire noise a lot more in an EV than you do in a petrol car because there's a lot less noise. Exactly.
So that's the most one of the first things you notice when you get into an EV. For anyone who's watching this and hasn't driven an EV yet, is you get into this thing and you put it in reverse or you start driving off and there's
kind of like
silence.
Yeah.
Some of them make a little beeping sound or play some music if you put it in reverse to alert passengers you're about to drive over them. Some of them don't. And when you pull off, it's just a quiet experience.
Well, it's quiet for about a half a second when your passengers are, and then the screaming starts because the performance of these things is just, you know, they're like, slow down, oh my God,
we're all gonna die.
Exactly. Which is the most fun. And if you haven't yet experienced acceleration of an EV, I urge and encourage you to go and get in one, pretty much anyone, and just
preferably a twin motor one.
A twin motor, yes, yeah. Just brace yourself.
Now, of course, the servicing side of these things does not apply to the three bottom items on this.
No,
list.
Correct. You've still got to service the petrol engine. That's in those. Mm-hmm. With all due consideration, in your range extender electric vehicles, typically the electric range that they're aiming at is anywhere between 80 and 150 Ks. Mm-hmm. So actually, if you're doing that in a day, you're not going to use your petrol engine. Mm. So,
which is the case with PHEVs as well.
Correct, mm. correct.
Most of the time.
Correct. So what happens there is your servicing interval actually becomes annual rather than mileage-based. Mm-hmm. And generally, annual service is just a case of, change an oil filter, maybe change the oil.
Pop in for half an hour and leave again.
That's it, exactly mm. that. So your running costs also on those should be lower.
Yeah.
Although you've still got all the issues with the oily bits having to need the maintenance.
Yeah.
So it becomes interesting. What I think the range extender and the PHEV's real party trick is, of course, is the South African annual holiday where you go away to the coast, you do 1,000 Ks in a day, leave at 4 o'clock in the morning and you get there,
It's amazing how people really worry about that.
And you do that once a year, it's kind of
99% of the time you're going to be charging this thing at home.
Exactly, exactly.
And, or at the office.
So it just takes that away. And if you do want to go somewhere and you want to do more than 500 Ks in a day and you don't have a charging point at the end of your 500 Ks, it just takes all that anxiety away from you.
Now, we're going to be talking Buc-ee's later in this episode, but that is a great role for a REV or a PHEV because you can go into the Namibian desert or the Botswana, into the Kalahari and not worry about charging infrastructure at all.
Exactly, exactly.
So it kind of solves the problem.
And interestingly enough, the range on these things is between 800 and 1,000 Ks on them. So you actually don't need to worry about petrol nearly as much as your Land Cruiser next year does.
Yeah, you don't need those petrol
you don't need jerry cans attached to your vehicle adding extra weight. Yeah. So it's
if you're really going into deepest darkest Africa and you're not going to see a petrol station for 2,000 kilometers, you can do it.
Yeah.
But in theory.
Yeah, exactly that. So there's a lot of appeal to them. I think once people get over the learning curve, they might actually sell in significant numbers, really significant numbers.
South Africa's been very slow to adopt NEVs. Why is that? Is it because of load shedding? Is it because of consumers? Because of the price?
Well, there's a lot of resistance. I mean, I've been compiling a bunch of screen grabs from my LinkedIn feed from just people who post about concerns around EVs specifically. For example, the one is that if everybody buys an EV and plugs it into Eskom, Eskom's going to fall over. Mm-hmm. It's not true. Mm-hmm. If everybody plugged into Eskom immediately with all the EVs and placed all the load onto it, it's around about a 20% increase in the load for Eskom. Mm-hmm. Okay, that is a lot, but not at night when most of these cars are going to be plugged in.
Mm-hmm. Just not in the early evening.
Yeah, correct. You don't want to get home, plug your car in.
But we're going to head to a market, aren't we, where electricity is priced based on demand, like it is in many other markets. Well, so between midnight and 5 a.m., the price of electricity will plummet. And that's the time when you want to set the timers on your electric car,
charging system.
Charge when it's cheapest.
It's exactly what happens in the UK. Mm-hmm. Instead of paying pounds per kilowatt hour, they pay pennies per kilowatt hour overnight. So you effectively
charge for free,
charging for very low cost.
Yeah.
And in the UK, when you can sell your power back to the grid, you can charge at low power and then deplete your battery and sell it back to the grid during the day and make a profit for your car if you're not going anywhere that day. So there's a very interesting argument around specifically REVs that they are the means to get you off grid completely in your house. Because a lot of these cars now come with VTL, which is vehicle to load. Mm-hmm. So you can plug your car into your home grid.
Ah.
Now, if you've got a solar setup, right, and you're completely off-grid, or even if you're not completely off-grid, if you need extra power, just take it from your car. Your car plugs in, gives you up to 6 kilowatts into your home grid.
Yeah.
You've got 30-40 kilowatt hours of battery on your car.
100 kilowatts in some cases.
And if the car gets flat, it just turns itself on and recharges. So you've got a portable generator sitting in your garage.
Yeah.
So literally you can unplug Eskom and say goodbye. I'm not worried about cloudy days anymore. I'm not worried about not having electricity because as long as I've got a full tank of petrol in my car, I'm good to go.
And to put it into perspective, a large home probably has a 10, 15, maybe a 20 kilowatt hour solar installation and battery system at home.
That would be a big one, yeah.
That would be a big one.
Yeah.
Yet the high-end vehicles like a BMW XM or any of these sort of top-end cars have got 100, 100 and even 110 kilowatt hours of battery in them, significantly larger than what you have in a home solar installation, and could potentially charge your home for a week or more.
Correct. That's exactly it. And you know, the flip side is also true. If you've got your home solar system up and running and say, for instance, worst case scenario, you have to go to work during the day.
Mm.
Annoying, isn't it?
Yeah, terrible.
Just
who does this stuff?
Just chuck a couple. Well, I've been avoiding
not
it.
Us.
I've been studious avoiding it for years quite successfully. well, depending on how you define success. But when you get home, you can charge your, if you've got sufficient battery storage at home, you can charge your vehicle off that.
Mm.
Or, as more and more companies are doing, charging at the office. You know, you don't need a DC charger to charge at the office. AC is perfectly acceptable. You don't need to charge your batteries at 1,000 million megawatts per
That's not great for them anyway. Hour
if you wanted to. You just let it trickle in. And you know, over time is your friend. And you're quite right. So there's a lot of interesting information coming out around battery lifespans now, because we were talking about the running costs of cars being significantly cheaper. We have to talk about the bugbear that is a big concern for everybody, and that's the state of the battery health. So people are worried that the battery is going to expire after 5 years, and then they're in for a moribund to replace the battery, right? Because it is an expensive item. The data that seems to be coming out now with actual cars in the actual field having actually driven for 5 years or longer is very interesting. The battery life, if anything, has been vastly underestimated.
I've seen this.
And what's happening is the battery management systems in cars these days are that good that the battery state of health is maintained at optimum, and that the amount of fast charging that's been done on batteries is far less than people actually originally thought it would be.
And that's what damages the battery.
And it stresses the battery. It doesn't necessarily damage it if your battery management system is good and manages the process. But it does stress the battery. So typically, if you charge on AC, your battery life should actually be, in theory, an order of magnitude more cycles than the battery manufacturer guarantees. So if you're not using fast charging and the big battery cycle, for instance, battery life cycle on an EV is say 2000 cycles. If you're doing AC charging, you can probably double that to 4000. Now, if you're doing just round numbers in my head, 1000 cycles at 500 Ks per cycle, that's 500,000 Ks, right? So 2000 cycles.
No one keeps their car that long.
That's 1 million kilometers.
Yeah. Or very
few. 4000 cycles, that's 2 million kilometers. These are theoretical numbers,
sure.
Okay? Because there is also an argument to be made for the fact that batteries just, they like you and I, they get old. And age deteriorates batteries faster than the actual charging cycles and how you charge your cycles. That we don't know yet. We haven't got enough physical data yet in the data sphere around EVs. It's starting to emerge. But the trends, as I always say, the trend is your friend. And the trend appears to be that battery life has been underestimated. So instead of batteries being around for 5 years before you need to replace them, a la Nissan Leaf before they had battery management systems. Thanks, Nissan. You did us a world of favor there because that story has stuck for decades. You know,
don't be a very early adopter.
Don't be a very, very early adopter, especially not the Leaf, without battery management systems. So as the battery management systems improve, remember that, you know, for example, Tesla, you do an over-the-air update.
Yeah.
So it just updates the software in your car over the air if there's a tweak or something to be made to your BMS. So as this data starts to come out, it looks more likely that 8 to 12 years is an expected lifespan of your battery if you're using it under normal conditions. If you're using it excessively, it might be around about 10 years or so. But as time goes by, we're going to see this. And of course, what we are going to see is we're going to see the likes of the third-party battery suppliers coming in. It's not going to be an OEM battery you're going to put into your BMW. You're not going to go to BMW and buy a BMW battery. You're going to go down the road to Goldwagen and say, this is my BMW. I want that battery. And you get that battery at half the price, bang it in, job done.
The OEMs won't be happy about that.
And they're not going to be happy about that, but that's what's happening already. You know, so it's a case of they can control what they can control and what they can't control, they can't control. And if the vehicle's out of warranty, you know, That's pure market pressure that's going to bring these things into play. Mm-hmm. And what I'm also looking forward to seeing is kind of like the aftermarket speedsters getting their hands on EVs, jailbreaking them, unlocking limits. You know, who cares about battery life if it only runs 500 cycles, but we can get a gazillion kilowatts out of the thing? Hey, let's do it.
We need computer hackers to do these things hackers. Now.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we start to see that sort of thing happening, street races and drag races happening with EVs that have been tuned and tuning shops opening up, then you know EVs now embedded in society, in culture. Yeah. It's there to stay.
Yeah.
So these are things that I'm specifically keeping an eye out and open for.
Any final thoughts on this list?
No, I think that covers it. You know, it's an interesting summation of where it is. Obviously, our focus is primarily on BEVs. We quite like those, but you know, being Watts and Wheels, we're not limited to electric Watts. We do like kilowatts coming from fuel as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, as long as it goes fast, I'm sold.
Still like the sound of those cars, even if we favour EVs. Still a place for petrol cars.
There's definitely a space for a big growly.
The majority of vehicles eventually will be electric, but there'll still be a market for petrol heads.
It's one of those things I struggle with. I wonder if I'm going to be alive long enough to see it when I actually become a contrarian again and no longer an advocate for EVs, but an advocate for V8s because they're no longer around.
What is the electric equivalent of a petrol head? Head.
I came up with a term called a buzzhead.
A buzzhead.
Yeah, okay. And then I was told by some crop dusters that they'd used those in the 1970s. So I was like, oh, well, I'm using it for EVs and that's it. I'm sticking to it and that's my story.
Your electron head doesn't quite have same ring to it, does it?
A buzzhead. Yeah. That was it.
All right. Let me throw this on the screen because we're going to talk about this.
Now, this is an interesting vehicle. You know, so the Shark 6 BYD. It's one of those.
I'm very jealous, by the way, because you got to drive one of these, and I want this car.
Well, when I said drive, we drove it in the parking lot.
Oh, I see.
Well, actually, we didn't. We took it out the parking lot. We didn't realize we weren't supposed to take it out the parking lot.
Don't
tell BYD. We drove it on the actual road for about 100 meters.
Did you have a lot of Chinese gentlemen running after you?
No, we didn't actually. I don't think they noticed. Then we noticed no one else was doing it. It was kind of like, oh dear.
Oops. So what are your initial thoughts of this vehicle? It's a plug-in hybrid EV. Maybe we should define what this is.
Let's talk about what it is. So in essence, you can see there's a fuel flap on the left. And on the right, there's another fuel flap, but that's for electricity.
Mm-hmm.
So you can fill it up with, I think it's got 65-liter tank or so of 95 of SA's finest octane.
So it's petrol.
And that
it's drives, a turbo petrol.
That drives, 1.5-liter turbo petrol. That drives a generator that powers batteries. Mm-hmm. And the thing has got two motors, one on each axle, that are electric. And that's the primary means of propulsion.
Is this a Reeve or is this a PHEV?
Well, it's both. So Reeve and PHEV, the difference between the two is very really small.
Much.
Mm-hmm. So in effect, I would call it I prefer PHEV, plug-in hybrid electric vehicle, mm-hmm. because that's actually what it is. And it has a range of around about 800 Ks off a full tank,
mm-hmm.
right? What's interesting is that it puts out, I think it's just over 300 kilowatts and 800 Newton meters of torque out of that. And if you think about it, the 1.5-liter turbo petrol engine that's on there, it's giving you all that.
With the electric motor.
I'm leaving the dramatic silence. How can a 1.5-liter petrol engine give you…
Paired with the electric motor.
Can give you 300 kilowatts and 800 Newton meters. Well, because all it's doing is charging the battery. So the electric motors are giving you all that juice. But because you're not pulling 300 kilowatts all the time…
Yeah.
The petrol-powered motor is able to keep up with the topping up of the batteries. So the claimed fuel consumption on this thing, if you don't plug it in mm-hmm. and you drain it from empty to full off the petrol tank, is it around under 9 liters per 100?
Mm-hmm. That is very favorable next to…
Try do that with your Ford Ranger Raptor, you know, with its mighty… twin turbo V6 3-liter thing that I had for a couple of days.
Question.
That sucked my petrol tank dry in about a week.
Oh, that Raptor's beautiful though. It's beautiful.
It's stunning.
You need a fuel tanker behind you.
Yeah, you do.
Question. Will this beat the Ranger Raptor, the new one?
In speed. Yes, I think it will. So the numbers that EV manufacturers tend to quote on the all important, the only figure that ever matters in anything we ever discuss.
0 to 100.
Not to 100. How fast? That's all that matters. Don't care. Once you're at 100, nothing else matters. So they tend to be fairly accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that, I suspect, is because the conditions under which you do the tests generally are always the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's a battery, it's two motors,
mm-hmm.
and it's an accelerator pedal. And that's it. There's no launch control. There's no fanning about with having to set up the car in X, Y, Z suspension or sports modes or what have you. It's all done by the computer. You say, I want to go as fast as possible. Bang. It loads the parameters into the BMS, and away you go. Finished and clocked.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot less variation on the 0 to 100 times that one gets. And the claimed 0 to 100 time on the BYD Shark is faster than the range of Raptor.
That's incredible.
It's
while using half the fuel, probably.
Mark Jones from The Citizen, shout out to him. Mm-hmm. He does all these fantastic 0 to 100 time tests. We're going to find out when he gets the Shark on test
in the coming weeks.
We see where it goes.
Okay.
My bet is that it will be faster than the Raptor.
I have not seen one of these on the road yet, but my colleagues are saying they're seeing them everywhere.
Really?
I also
haven't seen one.
I don't commute a lot. My commute is just a few kilometers, so I don't see many new cars on the road. But I've heard they're out there, and there are a lot of them out there already, and there seems to be huge demand. They've sold out the first batch, from what I've heard.
I believe so.
Of several hundred of these that were brought into the country. So there appears to be demand. And in Australia, where they were introduced first, people can't get enough of them. And the reviews have been very good. They've been taking them into the Australian outback and really punishing it.
It's been getting really good press. So, I mean, it's not going to be as competent off-road as a Raptor.
Mm-hmm.
To get to the conditions where the Raptor is going to pull you out of trouble that a Shark will not, I think you need to go pretty extreme.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some clever electronics in the Shark that deals with a lot of the issues that any serious off-roader is mm-hmm. going to encounter. You're really going to find it's going to be the exception rather mm-hmm. than the rule, where the Raptor is going to be absolutely the only car that you can use to get off.
Of course, the Raptor comes with these very big tackies and...
Well, the Raptor comes with better suspension. I mean, the ride on the Raptor cannot be equaled. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've ever driven across washboard corrugations, sand roads, there's nothing to touch a Raptor.
Yeah.
It's just full stop.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Speed bumps disappear.
And you consider that thing over those things at 180, no problem. No, you don't even know you're doing 180.
Yeah.
It's just that good.
Yeah.
So there, you know, the shark being body on frame is just not going to have the same sort of composure.
Being Chinese, though, this has got a lot of tech in it.
You were talking about how it's been well received in Australia. I just want to touch on the pricing point just very quickly.
Yeah, of course.
It's 980 grand here, somewhere around there.
See, 960, I think.
960, okay. In Australia, it's priced at the same price as a Wildtrak.
Ah.
Which is about 150,000 rand less than we're getting it from here.
That's the tax.
That shows you what the tax is doing to us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's not fair. It's not fair. We should be getting the Shark for less. But anyway, be that as it may. So it's a Chinese vehicle. So you know it's packed with toys.
Mm.
It's got an HUD, head-up display, mm-hmm. for example. The rear seats actually tilt backwards. First time I've seen that on a Bucky.
Wow.
The space in the back is considerable. And it's got a flat floor plan, which is
quite a long
makes a big
vehicle.
Difference. Yeah, it's quite a long
mm-hmm.
vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, it's got all the toys. You know, with the Chinese marketing philosophy, it's kind of like you can't customize your vehicles on the production line because it's got everything on it already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can choose your color.
Mm-hmm.
And you can choose if you want mats on it or mm-hmm. not, and you can choose if you want a tow bar or not.
I was very disappointed to see that, actually, because in the Australian market, it's fully customizable.
So aftermarket?
Yeah. No, from the OEM.
Oh, really?
You can order different tires. You can spec it out any way you like on the Australian website. In South Africa, which is clearly a smaller market, they've decided only to spec the one. But it is the top end.
Yeah, correct.
BYD Shark.
Well, I don't actually have a problem with that because I mean I think you know it's now an expectation that the Chinese vehicles are so well specced with toys and gadgets that you pretty much when you're walking into an OEM you're pretty much expecting it.
Mm.
You know, so you want to see all the gizmos, and the toys list on the Shark is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's very nice.
There's stuff to keep you entertained for weeks.
Yeah. I think the only thing I'd change actually with this vehicle, if I was to buy one, would be to put off-road tires on, because the on-road tires it ships with are obviously not great for adventuring in the Karoo or wherever you're going. But apart from that, the spec list is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so the proof is in the pudding. You know, if BYD start to release their sales figures, we'll start to see. And, you know, again, if your colleagues are seeing them on the road, I haven't seen one on the road yet, I must be honest.
I haven't either.
But, you know, it's a case of I think it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's coming. Interesting.
So, having been in one and played around with it,
I don't want to push any buttons because I haven't actually
driven it and reviewed it.
I haven't driven it and reviewed it and had it in anger.
That's fair enough.
But
it sounds like you're
initial impressions. No, it's super cool.
Oh, you're going
super
cool. Oh, right. It's super okay.
Wow.
Okay.
It's super cool.
All right.
Because I love the idea that it's an electric vehicle, first and foremost. And I love the idea that I'm getting all that power and all that torque and all that drivability and all the toys for 1.5 litre turbo petrol. It's just like, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that it has a reasonably usable range of around about 120 Ks or so given on pure EV.
Which is enough for the commute.
Which is what I do every day. Mm. You know, so it makes a lot of sense to me.
In fact, if you work in Sandton and live in Pretoria – You should be able to do that on EV.
Absolutely
right. Only. Yeah.
And even if you don't have a fast charger at home, and by fast charger I mean an AC charger that you plug into the wall that you buy, gives you about 6 kilowatts, you can plug it into your 3-pin socket at 2 kilowatts and charge it overnight.
Yeah. So because the battery's not that big, it will charge overnight.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So, any downsides to buying a BYD? I mean, it's a fairly new brand in the South African market.
Do we trust it? So this is the big thing. I mean, we've had many buckies come here and take on Toyota and take on Ford,
only to leave with their tails between their legs
and walk away with a very bloody nose. You know, and there are numerous reasons for that. I mean, if you're buying a Toyota, you're buying the badge, you're buying the reliability, you're buying the bulletproof solidity of the vehicle. They just don't break.
And you're getting the parts if it does break.
If something does happen and you're out stuck in the middle of Botswana
or the middle of the DRC or Tanzania.
You just kick over a rock and find your local Toyota dealer and your stuff's sorted out. You know?
Exactly.
It's done. So the network of support that both Ford and Toyota have had, I mean, Ford had been in the country for 100 years.
Yeah,
I mean, you can't buy that. And it has enormous value, and that's why you see the resale values on your Toyotas and now your Fords going up substantially. And that, I think, is a big question mark for the Chinese. We do not know yet what the reliability of the vehicle is. We know they're well built. We know they look good, et cetera, et cetera. We don't know what the after-sale support looks like. So far, there hasn't been too much. But they're also still too new. We haven't got to the 5-year stage where these things are starting to get into the secondhand market in meaningful volumes.
To be fair, though, this isn't BYD's first rodeo in South Africa.
They've already launched a range of cars over the last few years,
including the Dolphin. The Dolphin Mini, I think, is coming soon.
The Aura.
The Atta 3. The Aura, is that BYD? No, that's GWM.
That's GWM.
GWM. And they're also launching a new plug-in hybrid EV, the C-Line 6.
Correct.
And the C-Line 7, which is a pure EV.
Yeah.
So they've got quite a few cars in the local market, but it is still fairly new, and they don't have all that many dealerships around South Africa yet.
Yeah.
So, for example, I think if you buy one of these vehicles and you live in a smaller town, you're probably going to have to drive into a city to have it serviced.
Correct.
Not that you have to have it serviced very often, but still.
Well, that's exactly it. And I mean, so you're going to weigh these are the trade-offs that one weighs. But, you know, as I affectionately refer to these double cabs, you know, a lot of them are pavement jewelry for Sandton. And as far as pavement jewelry goes, this is a pretty good looking pavement jewelry. I quite like it, you know. So it's a case of
– it looks mean.
It does look mean. Mm. And, you know, it's I think the looks are designed to be fairly similar to another brand we know well.
I'm guessing the BYD logo on the front lights up at night.
Absolutely. And so, you know, it's an interesting vehicle from that point of view. So those would be the downsides to it, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, getting a lot of toys, maybe there's more to break. We don't know the reliability of these. We don't know what they cost if something does go wrong on them. And what the warranty claims, validity, support is like. Mm-hmm. You know, I take OEMs when they talk about their warranties at face value.
Mm-hmm.
Don't believe a word they say until it's actually – comes down to the test and where you see the consumers actually being, you know, looked after and.
And you've driven around a parking lot, but BYD, if you're watching this video, get one to William.
We want one.
Give it just for a week or two. We want to.
I want it for a year. You know, so the whole EV lived experience.
Yes.
And I do think that there's a gap for that because I think a lot of people are wary about what the day to day lived experience with an EV is.
Yeah.
You know, what happens if you do have load shedding for 3 days? You know, where do you end up? You know, and how far away are your charging stations? And you know, and all this. And you know, I've tested a number of EVs over the last couple of years. And honestly, charging, even though I don't have a charging station at home, is not an issue.
Do you typically charge it over on a 3-pin plug, or do you
go
to charging stations?
I have a 90-kilowatt charger 3 km away from me, and I just go in there and I plug it in.
Oh, nice.
I spend 20 minutes, maybe half an hour, updating my work on my phone, playing games.
Really?
No, playing games.
Having lunch?
for 20 minutes, whilst the thing goes from 30% to 70% or whatever it is, and done.
Right.
You know? And honestly, it's never been an issue.
All right, so our preliminary verdict is super cool, but we really want to drive it first.
I really like it. Yeah, we'll confirm.
In a future episode, we'll give it a to be confirmed.
Yeah,
but we're hovering around the blue.
We're hovering around
the blue buzzer. Cool. Yeah, yeah. But I want to perhaps rain on BYD's parade a little bit now, and I want to go over to this one. Now, this is not confirmed coming to South Africa yet.
I hope it does.
It really looks nice in yellow, I must say. And this is a shark competitor, direct Shark competitor from Nissan, which I believe is not doing that well. They haven't been having a great time of it lately.
Well, yeah, Nissan at one stage were going to merge with Honda. I tongue in cheek, I mean, I love Nissan, but tongue in cheek, I said, you're either going to end up with a really crappy Honda or a really awesome Nissan. But you know, it's a case of Nissan blow hot and cold. They've had some amazing. I mean, you can't hold anything against the company that gave us something like the GTR.
Okay.
You cannot. Okay. You cannot. Okay.
I can't say I've had the pleasure of driving one.
No,
but
I can't say that either. Okay. But it buys them a lot of forgiveness in my books. It buys them a lot of forgiveness.
Buy them any forgiveness?
Yes, absolutely, because this is basically the equivalent of a Shark. And what's interesting about this is they launched this at the Shanghai Auto Show.
Yes.
And everybody is talking about the speed at which the Chinese go from concept to production of their vehicles. And Nissan have done that. Whether they just got lucky and this thing's been on the drawing boards for the last 6 years or not, I don't know. But if they're able to generate a vehicle of equivalent, basically it matches the BYD almost
spec for spec.
Almost spec for spec.
And arguably actually looks even better.
I said BYD looks good, but this is
I love the headlights. The front is beautiful.
This is really, really nice.
Yeah.
And the interior shots of this vehicle are also quite spectacular. So it's being released in China with as a battery, the Frontier they call it, Frontier Pro, with similar driving range. So I mean it's going toe to toe.
It's also got a 30 kilowatt-hour battery like the BYD Shark 6. Yeah.
So 100-something Ks on pure EV. And two plug-in, well, one plug-in point, one fuel point. You know? So it's pretty much exactly the same thing. If it's the same price, would I choose this over a Shark? Then I need to drive.
It's always. But it's nice that there's choice in this new segment.
But on principle, it looks amazing. It really does.
I just love that headline. The headlights on the front, the little Nissan logo that lights up,
the scallop on it. It's just got that. It's got that. I don't know how you define it. It's just got that right amount of aggression.
And the tires, if that's the standard tires that come with it, certainly look better than the standard BYD tires.
And those rims are amazing.
Yeah.
So it's a good looking vehicle. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see if Nissan bring it here. You know, so yes, there is ructions happening overseas. It may impact our local production.
Rumors the local Nissan factory may in fact be closed down.
Yeah.
I saw that in the paper this morning. So that's not great news.
No, it isn't.
But that is a nice looking car. So I think the key will be how much it costs.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, and Navara's being.
It's a popular brand.
It's a popular brand. Mm-hmm. I mean, against the big two, you've got Toyota and Ford, and then the rest pick up the scraps at the end of it. But Navara's up there.
It's interesting they're not using the Navara brand for this vehicle.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is.
I wonder why.
Maybe it'll come as a Navara here. We don't know.
Oh, it might.
It might. Mm-hmm. So. Let's wait and see.
We don't know much about it yet. We don't know how much it's going to cost. It's coming next year.
It looks cool.
And 2026 launch date.
If we have any influence over this in SA, bring it in.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Because, I mean, you've got open runway. You've got BYD to compete against. And pretty much that's it.
It almost feels like there's an opportunity potentially to try and break this duopoly of Toyota and Ford.
That's what's going to be the interesting thing. Yeah. Will it happen? I don't know. Because, I mean, I think our next picture is...
Yes. Unfortunately, I have to press quite a few buttons to get to the next picture.
No problem. But Ford are not going to go quietly into this good night. And here it is.
Here it is. On paper, not as good. It's got a much smaller battery.
Well, this is it. It's kind of like, I think Ford are trying, but they need to try a little bit harder.
But this is made in Pretoria.
40, 50 kilometer range. Mm. No.
Yeah, it's not enough.
Not enough.
Not when your competition is twice as
good. It will have to be significantly cheaper than the BYD.
Yeah.
It's going to have to be significantly
cheaper. Like 800K sort of price range.
And you know, it's kind of like...
Can it do that, given that it's probably going to be no EV tax on this?
If it's on the wild track, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just part of me is sitting there going, what were you thinking, Ford? Put in a bigger battery. Maybe they still can, you know. So
maybe it's not too late.
Maybe it's not.
They've started production, I believe, though. So
it's running. It's in production. They've spent, I mean.
They've got a whole line of Silverton.
Credit due where credit's in. Ford have put a lot of money into that line. Mm-hmm. They've invested significantly in Silverton over the last couple of years.
And Ford has a great name amongst Bucky buyers in South Africa.
Yeah, and they're producing Rangers for the globe. And
so, I mean, maybe South African Bucky buyers look past BYD. They know the Ford reliability. Exactly. Maybe they go for this, even if on paper it's not quite as good.
Well, it's just that range. Mm. It's just that range.
And it's probably not quite as advanced from a computerization perspective. It's probably not as...
I don't know.
But we haven't driven it, so we don't know.
We don't know. Mm-hmm. Remember, Ford also are not newbies to the electric scene. I mean, you know, the Lightning Overseas, the electric Mustang, the Mach-E. They've got some experience in this space. And what I do like about Ford, and I've always liked about them, is that they're still a family-owned business.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like that. I mean, yes, there's a bunch of guys that say they're just as bad as all the other corporates, but I have a soft spot for Ford.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've...
Actually, I have a soft spot for everybody, if truth be told, but there you go. You know.
But, yeah, the question is, South Africans are very loyal to Ford and Toyota Hilux. Can they break it? The jury's out.
We're going to find out.
We're going to find out.
Stellantis have made a significant bet in producing the Land Trek down in PE.
Yes.
So let's see how that goes when that launches in the next year or two.
Now tell us about this. This very amusing ad, which we're going to insert because it's so fun. Please let's include this ad.
It does appeal to the dark side of my dark sense of humor.
It's very funny. But what are we looking at here?
You're looking at a Slate, okay? And Slate is basically an EV Bucky.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Ute or utility or what are they called in America? Pickup.
A pickup, yeah.
So it's an Ute
in Australia.
It's an American company, mm-hmm. okay? And what they've come up with is this very interesting concept. You see how it's changing? Now it's an SUV, okay? And in essence, what they've built is a Lego. It's a Lego car.
Okay.
Right? So you buy the basic car. The panels are basically covered in matte gray and they are designed to be wrapped. So you can have a red slate or a yellow slate or a blue slate or a green slate with pink unicorns frolicking around in fields of cotton candy painted on the thing if you want them. There you go. And It's the cost of a wrap, about 10K these days, mm-hmm. give or take.
Mm-hmm.
And the car's built for it, so you don't get any of these nasty crinkles and things happening. And then basically there's nothing in the car. You get air conditioning and electric windows, and that's it. Anything else you want, you just buy and bolt in.
Mm-hmm.
So the car is almost infinitely customizable.
Modular car.
It's like Mr. Potato Head. Right? So you can pack your angry eyes. No, so if you want a different front grill, screw the one off, put another one on.
Right.
You can customize those with whatever you want. You can have
third party manufacturers open.
So it's basically open source manufacturer for your slate.
Right.
So if you want Duncan's slate, you can just have Duncan's slate carved cut out in stainless, put onto your car, whatever lighting you want, whatever taillight clusters you want, you name it. So it's built from that sort of ethos, and it's backed by Jeff Bezos.
Oh,
you've heard of him?
I have.
So I'm expecting to see these along with Hyundais and some BMWs for sale on Amazon. And that raises all sorts of interesting questions.
Do you think this will come here?
I've asked them actually, and they've said no, not yet.
No, but market's far too small for them.
It's a new vehicle.
Yeah.
And I mean, if they're selling on Amazon, I don't think it'll take much to get some entrepreneur somewhere in South Africa who's going to bring one out and open up a dealership.
They're already Teslas, yeah.
Just drive it, and you know, if you live in Rosebank or live in Johannesburg or live in Cape Town, you'll find a Slate dealership there.
It looks cool.
And away you go. And the concept around it is amazing. So you can just literally change it into a fastback. You can change it into an SUV, change it into a pickup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just literally at your own home, just click the panels on and off. When I say click, there's some bolts and things involved. But it can be made, I believe, into a seven-seater.
Okay.
Which is
or a hearse.
Which is interesting. Or a hearse. as you see in this advert. So it's you know, it and aggressively priced, $25,000 for the base unit.
Oh wow.
So that's it. And if you want range extension on it, you're going to have to do some serious modifications. But I imagine that will come in due course.
Okay.
Third parties will give you a long-range version of it.
I have to ask you, the only a bucky, if I can even call it a bucky, that we haven't spoken about, and it's not available in South Africa yet but may come later, is the Tesla Cybertruck.
Oh, do we have to? Oh, goodness.
Thoughts?
It's really rare that I don't have an opinion on anything. You know, I often say I have lots of opinions on lots of things. If you don't like them, I have others.
Yeah.
But on the Cybertruck, I am utterly ambivalent. I think I'd like to drive one. I might want to own one. But then I saw the new Hummer EV.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the most ridiculous thing I think I've ever seen. It's staggering. So it's an EV that has a range of about 250 miles. It's got three times twice the battery pack of everybody else. It's stupidly inefficient. And that's what I love about it. Because, I mean, it's just...
It sounds typical Hummer.
It's a Hummer, exactly. It's not supposed to make sense.
But it's not supposed to be an electric.
And if you drive it, everyone's going to look at you thinking, you must be the stupidest person in the world. And I quite like that. You know, it's just so out there. It's just so ridiculous.
If you want to be people to look at you, yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you want to be noticed for all the wrong reasons.
Same reason people buy Cybertrucks, I suspect.
That is it. But I think the Hummer has the Cybertruck nailed, because at least the Cybertruck has some element of sensibility in it in terms of the fact that, A, it's quick and it's got fast charging and it's got, you know, a software suite to blow your mind. But it's just not it's almost not silly enough.
Yeah.
But when you look at it, it's a ludicrous machine. It's why? Why would you do it?
It looks like a toy.
And maybe that's the point. Mm. And I just think that Hummer have stolen the march over them. I don't think Hummer's going to sell anywhere near the numbers that the Cybertruck will.
Mm.
But to be honest, I am fairly ambivalent on the Cybertruck. Mm. I'm not opposed to it. I'm not loving it.
I like the idea when Musk first described it, but when it eventually morphed into a vehicle, I thought, yeah.
But if you want to contrast that against an interesting vehicle, the one I really do like, the Type 00, the new Jag.
Oh, yeah?
When that launched, I don't think there were too many people in the automotive world or anybody who's ever driven a car that wasn't watching that launch.
Okay.
Because the hype around it was just something out of this world. And then they brought out that pink ad, which was sensational.
You enjoyed it?
It was the most appalling thing I think I've ever seen.
Right.
But you couldn't take you can't take your eyes off the horror. And you're thinking, what are Jag doing? What are they doing? And then my wife said to me, I quite like it.
Really?
And she was like, because it's positioning the brand completely in a different space. You know, people are moaning that Jag has left its roots.
Yeah.
People have left Jag.
Yeah. Yeah.
And its roots. They're not buying them anymore. No. So Jag is backed into a corner and they said, what we need is a new E-Type. And I think that's exactly what they've got in the Type 00.
Okay.
And I think every single person who can afford a new Type 00 mm-hmm. is going to look straight past that advert into their car and they're going to be, I want one.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is the point. And so whilst there's been all this, and I have this long-standing T-shirt bet with Mr. Mike Arbel from Exogy, I said to him, I think they're going to sell them in the – they're going to – if you're going to fall down, you're going to buy one over anything else. And I think that's the point. Mm-hmm. In that case, whatever they did in that marketing campaign, total success because they've created an awareness.
Important question. Are you going to get the blue one or the pink one?
No. I think when it comes out, you're going to have a choice of colors.
Ah.
But if it only comes in blue and pink, I definitely will take the blue. pink is a shocker.
Your wife will get the pink one.
The pink is a shocker. No, I'd love to say I could afford one.
How much is it going to cost?
Well, they're talking about £125,000.
Wow. Okay.
So it's not going to be cheap.
Yeah.
But they are talking, and interestingly, I don't like this about it. They are talking about finishes on the inside that are – wait for it. Made from granite.
What?
Granite finishes on the inside of this vehicle. Actual granite. So I'm kind of like, well, if you're taking the concept of possibly a veneer of stone, you know, it's going to have to be. If you're taking the concept of adding gravitas and weight to the car, literally.
It's one way to do it.
I
would imagine the battery's heavy enough as it is.
You can see I'm struggling. I can't make the leap from, you know, polished walnut to polished granite. I can't until I actually see it in the flesh.
Mm.
But that's sitting in the back of my mind going, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else in the car, I am sold.
Mm-hmm.
Totally sold.
Mm-hmm.
Just from the concept.
Well,
let's see what it looks like.
It's very clear that there is a lot to talk about in this space.
We could talk season
after season of this stuff, but it's your show at the end of the day. You tell us what you want us to talk about.
Yes, please do.
Send us a mail, wheels@techcentral.co.za. Let us know what you think of season zero. Tell us what we're doing well. Tell us what we're not doing so well. Send us some EVs to drive if you're a vendor. We'd love to see them.
And do we have to say at this point that you must share this with all your friends because we're wonderful and –
Exactly. If you're watching this on YouTube, click that like button and whatever else you need to do.
Just forward to someone you might think what we've talked about is interesting.
Exactly.
Because you really want to get behind the grips of the lived EV experience and try and dispel some of the misconceptions out there around them.
If what this show can do is really to generate some excitement about electric mobility in South Africa, I think we will have done our jobs.
Yeah, there you go.
It's an exciting space. If you buy an electric car now, you are still in the relatively early stages of the industry here in South Africa, but you're probably not at the bleeding edge anymore if you were going to buy a Nissan Leaf back in 10 years ago. there's much less risk to get into the space now. You're still going to pay over the odds thanks to our government. Hopefully that changes soon. Not the government. Well, maybe that too. But let's not go there. Let us know what you think of the show. And we're going to do three episodes in season zero. And if it's well received by you, we'll continue.
Hopefully. Yeah, absolutely.
Good to see you, William.
I've enjoyed it. Likewise, Nathan. Thank you very much.
We'll chat again. Thank you.